Brethren, this is the fifth Sabbath in the count to Pentecost. This year, Pentecost is on May 28th. And we know we count from the Sunday during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And we count that first week, starting with Sunday, that first week on the Sabbath is the seventh day, the first week. And then we count the second week, and the third week, the fourth week. We're now in the fifth week. We know there's two more weeks. The seventh week, or the 49th day, and then we're going to be keeping the Pentecost the day after on the 50th day in May 28th. Pentecost is the only festival that we must count in order to know the day. God instructs us to count from the wave sheaf offering during the days of unleavened bread. We are instructed to count seven Sabbaths, then the day after the seventh Sabbath is the Feast of Pentecost. Most years, counting the days to determine when to keep Pentecost is very simple. But there are times when it becomes complicated and it creates a lot of confusion. It is when the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday and the last day is on a Sabbath. And we'll get into that a little bit here today. Today I would like to focus our attention on the counting of Pentecost. We will look at an example within the Bible that gives us an answer regarding when the wave sheaf offering occurred on that complicated year when the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday. Mr. Foster has asked many of us to give topics from what they call What Do We Believe? That's handed down through Kagwa. And this is one of those topics that he asked to be covered. So if you'd like a title, the title for this message is The Counting of Pentecost. The Counting of Pentecost. Let's first begin by turning back to Leviticus to read God's instructions. We know Leviticus 23 is where God lists all of the festivals that are to be given. That he sets appointments, he sets times, he sets exactly what he expects us to do. And we must first need, I'd like to first go through Passover, the days of unleavened bread, and then we will begin to read what God instructs us with Pentecost. Let's begin reading here in Leviticus 23, beginning in verse 4. It says, "These are the feasts of the eternal." Keep in mind, these are the appointments that God sets. They are God's. These are the feasts of the eternal. Holy convocations or sacred assemblies. We call them holy days at times. Which you shall proclaim at their appointed time. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the eternal's Passover. Very clearly, when the Passover begins, it's on a specific day that God commands. It's on the 14th day of the first month of the Hebrew calendar. Then in verse 6, there's no doubt. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. So very clearly, we have no confusion on when the days of unleavened bread begin. It's on the 15th day of the Hebrew calendar of that first month. Verse 7, on the first day you shall have a holy convocation. Once again, it's to be called a sacred assembly. We're to assemble together. On the first day you have a holy convocation, you shall do no customary work on it, but you shall offer an offering made by fire to the eternal for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. So we see very clearly here with Passover and the days of unleavened bread, there's no confusion. God tells us the exact day that we are to keep these. It's a little different for Pentecost. Let's begin in verse 9. And it says, "And the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying," this is God telling Moses to tell the ancient Israelites these instructions. Verse 10, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give to you." So let's stop here. This instruction doesn't have anything to do with the ancient Israelites until they cross the Jordan and enter the Promised Land. He says here, when you come into the land which I give to you and reap its harvest. There's going to be a harvest there, and you're going to be reaping it. Then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. A first fruit, a small amount of grain that would be made into an omer and that would be brought to the priest. What's the priest to do? Verse 11. He shall wave the sheaf, or he should elevate that dry omer. Many different explanations on how exactly that was done, but more importantly, what was being done is the priest was asking God for acceptance of this offering for the people, for the sake of the people. He shall wave the sheaf before the Eternal to be accepted on your behalf, on the people's behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. So here's where confusion comes in when it says on the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. What Sabbath? A weekly Sabbath? A high holy day Sabbath? What Sabbath is even being discussed here? We'll get back to that. Verse 12. And you shall offer on that day of the wave sheaf, when you wave the sheaf, a male lamb of the first year. So there was other animals and such that was part of the instruction that was to be offered to God along with this first fruit of the harvest that was to be taken out. When you wave the sheaf of a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a burnt offering to the Lord, its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah, a fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire to the Eternal for a sweet aroma, and its drink offering shall be of wine 1/4 of a hin. You shall eat neither bread, nor parched grain, nor fresh grain until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God. Now we need to keep in mind what this verse says, because this comes into play in determining what is meant by this in verse 11, where it says that it is to be given on the day after the Sabbath. But here the instruction in verse 14 very, very clearly says the ancient Israelites would not be able to take any grain out of the field to make bread. They wouldn't be able to take any grain out of the field to have it parched or to have it cooked with a dry roasting, or they could not take it out as fresh grain until the wave sheaf offering was presented to God. They weren't to get any of that grain out of the field until it was offered to God. It shall be a statue forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. Then in verse 15 is where the counting begins as far as that instruction. Verse 15, and you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. So from that wave sheaf offering, the count begins. You count 7 Sabbaths. Brethren, we're on our 5th Sabbath right now. Next Sabbath will be 6th. In 2 weeks will be 7th. And on the day after that 7th Sabbath will be the Feast of Pentecost. Verse 16, count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Okay, so I'm not a smart man, but when it says here that the 7th Sabbath is day 49, then the count must begin on a Sunday. Sunday is number 1. The Sabbath is day 7 on that first week. The second week is the 14th day, the 21st day, the 28th day. The 7th Sabbath is 49 days. It says, then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. It said there at the beginning in verse 16, count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. So that makes the seventh Sabbath, it has to be the 49th day, if the next day after that seventh Sabbath is the 50th day, which would be Pentecost. Keep this in mind, because this will come into play later on. Verse 17, you shall bring from your habitation two wave loaves of 2 tenths of an ephah. They shall be a fine flour, they shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits to the Lord. So at the beginning of the harvest is the wave sheaf offering that was presented to God. And we won't be doing this today, but we know there's spiritual application to that, with being Jesus Christ being representative as that wave sheaf offering. But at the end of this harvest, at the 50th day, there was to be another offering offered to God. It was a two wave loaf offering, and other animals and such were to be presented with it. Verse 18, and you shall offer with the bread 7 lambs of the first year without blemish, 1 young bull, 2 rams. They shall be as a burnt offering to the Lord with their grain offering and their drink offerings, an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma to the Lord. Then you shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats as a sin offering, 2 male lambs of the first year as a sacrifice of a peace offering. The priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord. So there was an offering to be presented to God on the first day. There was a 2 wave loaf offering along with other animals offered to God on the 50th day. They were to be presented to God with by the priest, along with 2 lambs, it says. They shall be holy to the Eternal for the priest. And you shall proclaim on that same day that it is a holy convocation to you. That being the 50th day, that being the Feast of Pentecost, it was to be a holy convocation to you. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statue forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. Once again, these things were to be done throughout your generations. It was said that in verse 14. It said it again in verse 21. And we're still doing it today in our generation. We're trying to fulfill what these mean from a spiritual standpoint in our day. So this is the instruction that we are given for the determination of when Pentecost would occur on any given year. After God reminds Israel about Passover and the days of unleavened bread, God added instructions that would only apply after the nation crossed the Jordan. And I want to point out here, brethren, that he makes it very clear that, you know, Passover is on the 14th. First day of unleavened bread is on the 15th. He gives this count for Pentecost. Down at the Feast of Trumpets, he says in verse 24, in the 7th month, on the first day, he gives an exact day of the Hebrew calendar. The Day of Atonement is on the 10th day of that 7th month. The Feast of Tabernacles is on the 15th day of that 7th month. And we know that 8 days later would be another holy convocation. God makes it extremely clear on when these festivals are to be done. But for the Feast of Pentecost, it was different. He asked us to count. If it was on an exact day of the month, we wouldn't have to count. We need to keep this in mind. God added these instructions that would only apply to the ancient Israelites after the nation crossed the Jordan River and entered the Promised Land. We read that in verse 10. where it says, when you come into the land which I give to you and reap its harvest. There was going to be a harvest there already, and they were to reap it. Verse 11, very important terminology here, where the wave sheaf was to be done on the day after the Sabbath. That term, after, that day after the Sabbath. In verse 15 and 16 is where this counting of the 50 days was discussed. And 14, verse 14, showing that this harvest, they could not touch any of the grain until that wave sheaf offering was presented. A lot of this is important for us to move forward to determine what Sabbath, what day after the Sabbath that is being discussed. There's a few ways to interpret this phrase, the day after the Sabbath. It's caused much confusion. I'm sure some of you in this room probably know of brethren that we have kept sat next to in the past that keeps Pentecost on a different day. There's different interpretations of this day after the Sabbath, and some have decided one way and some have decided others. But there's a few ways to interpret this phrase. It is widely accepted that this phrase has a connection to the days of unleavened bread described in verses 6 through 8. Here in Leviticus 23, we're going to actually read a scripture in Joshua that ties the wave sheaf offering to the first day of unleavened bread. It's in the days of unleavened bread. We must determine what Sabbath is being discussed at the time period of this days of unleavened bread. Let's look at three different interpretations for the day after the Sabbath. There may be more, I don't know, but there's three common interpretations. The first interpretation, many in the Jewish community consider this to be a reference to the day after the annual Sabbath or the day after the first day of unleavened bread. So they're looking at the annual Sabbath, not the weekly Sabbath. We as a church do not agree with this interpretation because it would lead to Pentecost always being on a fixed day of the Hebrew calendar. Because we know, we've been told, that the first day of unleavened bread is the 15th day of the first month. If you're going to key off of that high holy day, that annual holy day, then the wave sheaf offering would always be on the 16th. But God is telling us that we must count to determine when Pentecost would be. He could have easily said, it's on the 16th day, if this first interpretation was correct. This interpretation would eliminate the need for the instruction to count, to calculate when Pentecost would be in any given year. Because of that, we've tossed that interpretation. Because we feel, and I believe, we must count. Because God gave some very specific instruction that we must count to determine when Pentecost would be. It's not on a given day of the first month in the Hebrew calendar every single year. The second interpretation, others believe the phrase the day after the Sabbath indicates that the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread is the key to determine the day of the wave sheaf offering. So in any given 7 days of the days of unleavened bread, there is only one weekly Sabbath. There's only one. What this second interpretation is saying, that this weekly Sabbath must be within the days of unleavened bread, and you must count after it. This interpretation focuses on the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread, that it needs to be within the days of unleavened bread. Most years that wouldn't yield any difference with how we interpret the phrase, but when the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday, then it would. Because If the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday, the Sabbath is the last day of unleavened bread. If the Sabbath has to be the key to be, that has to be within the days of unleavened bread, then the wave sheaf offering would actually take place outside of the days of unleavened bread, a day after the last day of unleavened bread. If by identifying the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread is the focus, then a year when this day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday to Saturday, the wave sheaf offering would take place on the day after the seventh day of the feast, after the days of unleavened bread are complete. And if that's the case, then Joshua and the ancient Israelites failed in an account that we're going to read here in a minute. Because of biblical evidence that we have, we do not believe this is accurate understanding of the instructions for counting, for calculating Pentecost. Now, I think we could determine many spiritual aspects of Jesus being unleavened and so forth. There's a lot of other things that we can look at from a spiritual standpoint that also would support that the wave sheaf offering should be within the days of unleavened bread. But that's another subject. Okay, the third interpretation that we have agreed with and that what we have kept for many, many years now, the day after the Sabbath is simply a reference to the first day of the week, which is Sunday. It is Sunday that is key, that needs to be within the days of unleavened bread that occurs within it. To make it simple, it would be only the Sunday that is within the days of unleavened bread. So if the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday, there's only one Sunday in that week, and it would be the first day of unleavened bread. Which brings up many other questions. Can it be offered on the first day? It's a high holy day, and so forth. And a lot of people have thrown out a lot of arguments regarding that. But we will address them here shortly. We believe this to be the most accurate interpretation based on the Bible accounts that we can turn to. We read here in Leviticus 23, verse 14, "You shall eat neither bread nor parched grain nor fresh grain until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God." So the wave sheaf offering here in verse 14 had to be presented before they would be able to take grain out of the field and eat it or prepare it for food. Very clearly, they were not to eat of the harvest grain until the wave sheaf offering was given. Every few years, 2025 will be the next year when this occurs, where the first day of unleavened bread will be on a Sunday. If those who were alert to this, I think 2021 was the last time when this occurred. And some of our friends would be keeping the Pentecost on different days and so forth. This always leads to questions when to start counting the 50 days to Pentecost. God's instruction says, "You shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering." And we feel that is Sunday. Sunday is the day after the Sabbath that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering. It fits with verse 15, where the count starts on a Sunday and it ends on a Saturday. So the seventh Sabbath is day 49. It has to start on a Sunday in order for that to occur. When the first day of unleavened bread falls on a Sunday, the question arises is whether the day of the wave sheaf could fall on the first day of unleavened bread, or would it fall outside of the days of unleavened bread after the last day of unleavened bread? It's really a question of understanding the correct application of the phrase, the day after the Sabbath. And there's a lot of Hebrew words you can get into. There's a lot of arguments that you can get into. But what we will look at here coming up is a very, in my mind, I'm a very simple man. It's very simple explanation of how we are to count. Keeping these instructions in mind of what we read here in Leviticus 23, we can read from the Bible approximately 40 years later. After the 40 years of wandering, after Moses instructed the ancient Israelites there in Deuteronomy, a whole chapter of giving them instructions, he wasn't allowed to go into the promised land. Joshua is the one that was chosen to cross the Jordan and bring the Israelites into the promised land. Approximately 40 years later, to the first Passover season after Israel entered the promised land, Israel crossed the Jordan River and entered the land on the 10th day of the first month. Okay, we know that Passover was the 14th day of the first month. We're going to read here in a second. They crossed the Jordan into the promised land, and this instruction wouldn't have anything to do with them until they entered the promised land. So we're going to read. They crossed the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, 4 days before Passover, less than a week before the wave sheaf offering would have to be given. The harvest was already there. Let's read here. Let's go to Joshua chapter 4. Here we're going to read when they entered the promised land. Joshua chapter 4. Moses is no longer on the scene. All of those men that started at the beginning of the 40 years, they died. They weren't allowed to cross. But the children that was born during that time, we can begin to read here at Joshua chapter 4, beginning in verse 19. It says, "Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped at Gilgal on the east border of Jericho." So here they entered on the 10th day of the first month. Keep in mind, Passover would be on the 14th. We know the first day of unleavened bread is the 15th. We know that for a fact by Leviticus 23. Now, let's begin to read in Joshua 5. This doesn't have anything to do with the count, but I want you to understand what they were doing between the 10th and the 14th. Let's see what they were doing. Joshua 5, beginning verse 1. "So it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that the Eternal had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel." Verse 2. "At that time the Eternal said to Joshua, 'Make flint knives for yourselves and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time.' So Joshua made flint knives for himself and circumcised the sons of Israel at the hill of foreskins." Verse 4. "And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness, in the 40 years of the wilderness, on the way, after they had come out of Egypt. For all the people who came out had been circumcised, but all the people who were born in the wilderness on the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised." Verse 6. "For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness, till all the people who were men of war who came out of Egypt were consumed," or they died, "because they did not obey the voice of the Eternal, to whom the Eternal swore that he would not show them the land which the Eternal had sworn to their fathers, that he would give us a land flowing with milk and honey." Talking about the promised land. Verse 7. So Joshua circumcised their sons, whom he raised up in their place. For they were uncircumcised, because they had not been circumcised on the way. So it was, when they had finished circumcising all the people, that they stayed in their places in the camp till they were healed. Now you can go through and read. They don't heal in half a day. They don't heal probably in 2 days. It takes a few days for them to be healed, where they can probably even move around. Verse 9. Then the Eternal said to Joshua, "This day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore, the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day." So we see the first thing that occurred after crossing the Jordan was those who had been born during the wandering in the wilderness were circumcised. So the Israelites encamped at Gilgal and kept the Passover there on the 14th. Now, let's continue reading in verse 10. So the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day. They crossed the Jordan on the 10th. They're now keeping the Passover per the instruction on the 14th day of the first month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. Now take note of this verse 11. Very key here. And they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. They ate of the harvest on the first day of unleavened bread. What did God say? He said, you do not bring any grain out of the field to make bread to eat. You don't bring any grain out of the field to roast as parched. You do not take any fresh grain out for consumption. But what occurred on this first day of unleavened bread? They ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. We look at this verse as the wave sheaf was given early on the first day of unleavened bread. Then they were able to gather grain for themselves to eat. You might say, were they allowed to go in the field and take food? Well, we'll address that in a second. They were allowed to do that, to eat for their own family. But then I want you to notice verse 12. It says, "Now the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of land." So on the 16th day, the manna stopped. What did the Israelites eat for all those years until then? Manna. There was no need for the manna after that first day of unleavened bread. Why? Because they would be able to harvest grain out of the field to feed themselves. It says the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land. And the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. So the children of Israel kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month, on the day after the Passover, which was the 15th day, which is the first day of unleavened bread. They ate the produce of the land, including parched grain. Okay, we have to decide here. Joshua disobeyed God's instructions that he had Moses give him. If they're eating on the first day of unleavened bread, if the second interpretation is correct, they weren't to have the wave sheaf offering till outside of the days of unleavened bread, after the last day of unleavened bread, if the Sabbath had to be within. Okay, if that's true, if the second interpretation is true, Joshua disobeyed. The ancient Israelites disobeyed God's instruction. And we're going to read that they did not here in a second. But remember back on Leviticus 23, verse 14, it says they could not eat until after the wave sheaf offering had been offered, which clearly shows to all of us in the church that it was on the first day of unleavened bread that the wave sheaf offering was presented in that given year. Putting the pieces together from the Bible, we conclude that Joshua 5, that the first day of unleavened bread fell on a Sunday. Since they were eating of the parched grain on the first day of unleavened bread, we conclude that the wave sheaf offering must have been offered on the first day of unleavened bread that year. So in 2025, when the first day falls on a Sunday and the last day falls on a Saturday, we will assume our count from the first day of unleavened bread. Because of this example, as well as others that could be brought in from a spiritual standpoint. Some have asked whether it was appropriate to have the wave sheaf offered on the first day of unleavened bread, since it was associated with the beginning of the harvest. Were they allowed to do that on a holy day, a high holy day, a sacred assembly, a holy convocation? There is no biblical instruction against offerings being presented to God on a holy day. In fact, we're going to go back to Numbers 28, and you can do that. Every holy day had special offerings. And brethren, they gave way more offerings on the high holy days than they did on a daily work day. A whole lot more work God commanded them to give as offerings on the high holy days. Let's go back to Numbers 28. I want to show that just to make it very clear. Here we're going to read that there were more offerings on the first day of unleavened bread than a normal work day. Here in Numbers 28, it talks about different offerings that they were to be given on the daily sacrifices, on the Sabbath, the monthly, on the festivals, on Passover, Feast of Weeks, and so forth. Let's just read it a little bit here. Let's begin in verse 1. Chapter 28 and verse 1. It says, "Now the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel and say to them." So this is God telling Moses that this is a command. You tell them and command them to do this. "And say to them, my offering." Man, he's putting emphasis on that. He says, "Command the children of Israel and say to them, my offering, my food for my offerings made by fire is a sweet aroma to me. You shall be careful to offer to me at their appointed time." An exact time that God appoints that this is to be done. Verse 3, "And you shall say to them, this is the offering made by fire which you shall offer to the Eternal. Two male lambs in the first year without blemish, day by day." So this is the daily sacrifices. This would be a work day. That two male lambs. They would only prepare two male lambs only. "Without blemish, day by day as a regular burnt offerings. The one lamb shall be offered in the morning. The other lamb shall be offered in the evening. And 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour is a grain offering, mixed with 1/4 of a hin of pressed oil. It's a regular burnt offering, which was ordained at Mount Sinai for a sweet aroma, an offering made by fire to the Eternal. And its drink offering shall be 1/4 of a hin for each lamb. In a holy place you shall pour out the drink to the Eternal as an offering. The other lamb, the second lamb, you shall offer in the evening as a morning grain offering, and its drink offering. You shall offer it as an offering made by fire, as a sweet aroma to the Eternal." So God commands two lambs, the workload of trying to prepare two lambs to be sacrificed would be on the daily sacrifices. Then on the Sabbath, and on the Sabbath day, there would be two lambs in the first year without blemish, and so forth. Monthly offerings They had, at the beginnings of your month, you shall present a burnt offering to the Eternal. 2 young bulls, 1 ram, and 7 lambs in their first year. Many more sacrifices, many more animals to be prepared for that sacrifice. And it was along with other instruction. And then we get down to verse 16, where it talks about specific offerings and sacrifices that he commanded on the festivals. And we're not going to cover all the festivals, but let's look at here at Passover in verse 16. On the 14th day of the first month is the Passover, the Eternal. Then it says, verse 17, and on the 15th day of the first month is the feast. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. Okay, so this is the time in which we are talking about in Joshua chapter 5. Some have said, you know, God wouldn't require that work to be done to grab grain out of the field in order to be presented on a high holy day. On the 15th day of this first month is the feast. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work. And you shall present an offering made by fire as a burnt offering to the Eternal. 2 young bulls, 1 ram, and 7 lambs in the first year. So we see here, God commands much more work to be done in preparation for these offerings on this first day of unleavened bread than they did on the work days, on the daily sacrifices. But this is what God commanded Israel to do. Be sure they are without blemish. Their grain offering shall be fine flour mixed with oil. 3/10 of an ephah you shall offer for a bull, and 2/10 for a ram. You shall offer 1/10 of an ephah for each of the 7 lambs. Also 1 goat as a sin offering to make atonement for you. You shall offer these besides the burnt offerings of the morning, which is for the regular burnt offering. In this manner you shall offer the food of the offering made by fire daily for 7 days as a sweet aroma to the Eternal. It shall be offered besides the regular burnt offerings and its drink offerings. And on the 7th day, you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall do no customary works on it. So on that first day of unleavened bread, the day after, or that's the day after the Sabbath, when they were eating of the harvest, on that first day of unleavened bread, God commands all of this offering or this sacrifice to be presented to him on that day. So it's clear in our minds that there was nothing wrong with presenting offerings on the first day of unleavened bread. The wave sheaf offering could easily have been done if that is what God instructed. And that's what we do believe. In the example of Joshua 5, the wave sheaf offering, which is offered on the first day of unleavened bread, marked the beginning of the harvest. All the other offerings that God instructed in Numbers 28 was also done. The harvest could begin any time after the wave sheaf had been offered. And it was early on that day of unleavened bread, that first day of unleavened bread. The years when the wave sheaf was offered on the holy day, the major work, obviously, would have been harvested, would have been no doubt outside of the holy day. But was it okay for them to gather grain out of the day, out of the field, for themselves that day? Was that okay? Can food be prepared for themselves on the first day of unleavened bread? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 12, where God inspired this to be answered, this question. We're going to read here that it was okay to prepare food on the holy days for themselves, for their family. Exodus 12, beginning in verse 15. It says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats Whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. That's the first day of unleavened bread. It's a sacred assembly. It says, and on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So it was okay for them to gather the food and prepare it for just themselves to eat on that given day, that first day of unleavened bread. The biblical reason why we do not accept the second interpretation is this. If you remember, the second interpretation is the Sabbath had to be within the days of unleavened bread, which means the wave sheaf offering would have been after the last day of unleavened bread, which means Joshua disobeyed. The Israelites disobeyed. The second interpretation of the day after the Sabbath, when the wave sheaf was after the last day of unleavened bread, the Israelites were eating it on the first day. They would have disobeyed. They would have ignored Moses' instructions about this. Did they ignore Moses' instructions? Let's go to Joshua chapter 11. We're going to read here that they followed all that Moses instructed them. Joshua 11. And let's read here in verse 15. Joshua 11, verse 15. As the Eternal had commanded Moses his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, and so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that the Eternal had commanded Moses. We see that the second interpretation could not be correct for Joshua chapter 5, because they would have done the wave sheaf offering after the Sabbath, which was in the days of unleavened bread, which would have been the last day of unleavened bread. The wave sheaf would have been outside of it. For a summary of counting to Pentecost, what did the church decide on the three interpretations of the day after the Sabbath? The church has concluded that the first interpretation could not be correct because it didn't require counting each year as God instructed. It would be after the first annual holy day, and the first day of unleavened bread at times is during the week. So how do you count 7 days to the first Sabbath? And how do you get to the 49th day being the seventh Sabbath, unless the count began on Sunday? The church has concluded that the second interpretation could not be correct because the Israelites would have disobeyed God's instructions of eating the harvest before the wave sheaf offering was presented to God. The Bible clearly said they followed the instructions that God presented to Moses and Moses gave to Joshua. The church has concluded that the third interpretation is correct. The day after the Sabbath is simply a reference to the first day of the week, what is referred to as Sunday, that occurs during the days of unleavened bread. There's only one Sunday that occurs within the days of unleavened bread. When the first day is on a Sunday, the wave sheaf offering count has to begin on the first day of unleavened bread, as it did in Joshua 5, a biblical account that God inspired to be written and put into the Bible. To make it simple for all of us, to me, it would be only the Sunday that is within the days of unleavened bread. That's day one. The seventh day would be the next Sabbath, and you would begin to count 7 Sabbaths. The seventh Sabbath is a 49th day, and they said the day after, the 50th day. If it's the 50th day, that seventh Sabbath had to be 49. it would be the day of Pentecost or the Feast of Pentecost. We believe this to be the most accurate interpretation based on the Bible accounts. The next example of this first day of unleavened bread being on a Sunday will be 2025. So a couple years from now. Pentecost is the only festival that we must count in order to know the day to keep it. Just go through Leviticus 23. He tells us the exact day on every other festival. But he doesn't give us an exact day on Pentecost. But he gives us this lengthy instruction on how to count. And we are to count to determine when Pentecost would begin. And it's always on different days of the Hebrew calendar. God instructs us to count from the wave sheaf offering during the days of unleavened bread. We are instructed to count seven Sabbaths. Then the day after the seventh Sabbath is Pentecost. This year, May 28th. The seventh Sabbath this year is May 27th. The 49th day, the day after that seventh Sabbath, is number 50. The counting of Pentecost had to be very important for God. He has a reason for that. I'm sure he'll describe that in detail of why he made us count on all of that. But that is the instruction that he has given to us, and it must be very important to God for us to follow that. Hopefully this has helped to clarify any confusion regarding the counting of Pentecost.